Last one here. You're almost at the end.
Just first time VS Livers.
Oh, awesome.
Wow. That's a good audience.
Excellent. Thanks. Who here flew in from out of town for this event? Oh, that's pretty – wow. More than half of you looks like are not local to the area. That's awesome.
Who came to my session and got the Google Doc with all the places to go in Seattle? Few of you. Ask those people. It's just a bit.ly link. bit.ly/MOTZ-Seattle. I'll take you right to the Google Doc.
Take you right to your place and you can take a tour.
No, no. All
right.
I just moved a little bit more north, so I didn't add any of those spots yet. I'm keeping those exclusive.
Yeah.
Exclusive.
You don't want them crowding up your coffee shop.
That's right.
Well, welcome, everybody. You're here at the mobile development panel. We got myself. I'm Jordan. I'm going to be your MC for the evening. I work on the Apache Cordova tooling and Visual Studio and mobile tooling in general. And I have three fine gentlemen here with me today who I'm going to let them each go from this end here, right to left, because this guy's my manager, so I want to keep him happy first. Let him each do a little bit of an intro. And as you guys go, if you could throw out a fun fact about yourself.
Sure. All right.
Hi, everyone. So my name is Ryan J. Salva. I am the product manager and owner of the Visual Studio tools for Apache Cordova, the VS Code tools for Cordova and React Native, and generally for kind of mobile tooling at Microsoft. Fun fact about myself, for those of you that attended my last session a little bit earlier in the day, you know that I'm a big fan of space cats, and I spend a lot of time collecting pictures of cats in space. If you want to see any of my pictures of cats in space, you can go to my blog, spacecat.rocks, or ryanjsalva.com.
So I'm Joshua Weber. I'm a program manager on the HockeyApp team, here to talk to you guys today about anything mobile DevOps related. I think the fun fact about myself is that unlike the majority of the HockeyApp team, I actually played hockey for about 14 years, and I'm happy to explain to anyone why the Detroit Red Wings are the best hockey team out there.
James, is it live? Check, mic. I can always just yell, but then it won't get recorded. Check. No. Well, you guys can hear me because I talk loud.
Yeah, can we do a handoff there?
Handoff.
Yeah, we'll share it. I'm James Montemagno. I'm a principal PM on the Xamarin team here at Microsoft. I was at 3 years before that at Xamarin, the part of that Xamarin acquisition. And before that, I was a developer evangelist, and I've been creating apps with Xamarin for the last 5 years. So my entire goal, my dream, is that everyone is building amazing native applications with Xamarin and C#. Obviously, it's what I fell in love with when I came to mobile. It's what I know and love. Fun fact about myself is, even before I joined Xamarin, I had a huge passion for monkeys and for actually sloths. It's probably one of my favorite animals. When I met my girlfriend, we were actually like the only two people I ever knew like had this crazy addiction. I was like, yeah, if you ever come to my, you know, ever come over to my apartment or whatever, I have about like 50 stuffed monkeys. Not just because I have like, you know, Xamarin monkeys everywhere, but just like other ones I've collected over time. She's like, shut up, so do I. So fun fact, I took a picture, she was gone, and we just moved to a new place, and on our bed literally is like huge, like bigger than me size monkeys. It's amazing. Yeah, we seek them out. And we actually went to Costa Rica just to see sloths. Like, that was the only reason we went. Highly recommended. So, two fun facts.
Love it.
Yeah. Excellent. So, the way we're going to do this is, first and foremost, your questions are what we want to have come up here for everybody. And so, for each of you guys here, I don't know if you all know it, but I've got a Channel 9 guy for each of you. If there's somebody that you like the question particularly well, let me know, and I'll dive bomb with one of these. So, for your questions there.
Channel 9, Cozy. All right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, with that, I will repeat the question to our presenters to help kick things off. Is there anybody that has a question to get started?
And our theme for the day is?
The theme for today
Mobile development.
Mobile development, right. I was just assuming that part. Yes, mobile development, and actually help context that. Who here is already working on mobile development? Okay. And then who is familiar with Xamarin? Good mix. Oh, yeah. And how about Apache Cordova? And
I
hockey
came to
app
our sessions.
Yeah.
Who is familiar with hockey app? Oh, you all should be.
Yeah.
Shame.
You're all gonna love it by the end of this this panel. You're gonna be there downloading, installing, making things happen.
Yeah. All right.
Cool. So with that, any first question? Up in front here.
Yeah.
What will happen to the Microsoft phone
Oh, so the question is, what is our thinking of what will happen to the Microsoft phone? So you mean like Windows Phone? Excellent. Who would like to take that one?
That's a tough question.
Yeah, that is a hard one.
So I fell in love 6 years ago. I came to PDC, actually. I wasn't in here. We were in Big Tent. And I think conference sessions were actually in here. It's the first time I was ever on campus 6 years ago when I was working at Canon writing printer software. And that was exciting to me because Windows Phone 7 was actually just launching, and I'd never written a mobile phone app ever in my life. And for me, it was exciting because I was a C# developer. And the first apps I ever wrote were on Windows Phone. And I think what's interesting about Windows 10 Mobile is that, while it may not be the winner here in the United States as far as market share, it is in some countries around the world and in emerging markets. And it's interesting to see business-oriented, seeing us go towards a business focus with Windows 10 Mobile to see if that will spark up some things. When you think of the amount of applications that are being built for the enterprise, if companies are adopting Surfaces and Lumia phones or any of the next phones that come out, if they come out, there's more conferences, hopefully. I don't know. I'm just a lonely PM. Who knows? But to me, what's interesting is more than just Windows 10 Mobile. It's Windows Universal Apps, Windows 10 UWP applications. And what's exciting to me as a developer is that I've wanted that dream, is that I wanted to write one application to scale everywhere. And for me, as a C# developer, I've been living that dream with Xamarin, and I've had to create the UI multiple times, obviously for each platform. But then with Xamarin Forms, I'm everywhere. With Windows 10, what's exciting is that we have support for all different types of platforms, but it's what you can do with that single app. So I built our Evolve Conference application, and that ran on 10 Mobile, which was about 10% of our users at the conference. Then every single PC that was at the conference, which was about 90% of people. So it was like that nice companion application, and I did no work to get it on 10. And then after the conference, someone presented it running on HoloLens, which like blew my mind. So that is a way of escaping everything about that question into what I like about the platforms.
So I'm actually going to kind of build on that a little bit, which is to say that I think that not just for Windows, this is working out, here we go, not just for Windows, but really across all of the different platforms, what we're starting to see is a move away from just mobile phones to mobile devices, and having devices of all sizes and shapes and orientations, and some of them are convertibles, and some of them are just happen to be little 4-inch screens, right? And so while Windows Phone may or may not continue to be, kind of grow in terms of market share, Microsoft is going to continue to invest in many, many sizes of devices and the software to power those. And so what I think that really we as consumers are going to start to see is that you think of them less and less as phones. I don't know about you, but my mobile device isn't in my back pocket right now, which makes me feel a little bit naked. But I use the phone function on it very, very rarely, right? I use it like a little computer. And the beauty of Windows 10 and UWP is that little device can be anything. You can make UWPs work on little Raspberry Pis. And I think that Windows Phone as a device size is likely going to continue on for a very long time to come.
Yeah, the other part that I was going to build on that James did mention is that I've talked to a lot of customers, and it's not always the exciting use case, and it doesn't get a lot of media coverage. But when it comes to employee provided devices and company provided devices, where a company is really managing those devices on their premise, the Windows Phone platform, because it has that tie into the Windows ecosystem and just the strength of Microsoft's offering on managing devices and stuff like that, is really quite compelling. And actually, a lot of the customers do find it to be kind of the leader for those types of scenarios. So it's maybe not the big customer scenario or whatever like that, but I have seen a fair amount of companies who really pick Windows Phone first when it comes to deploying company-provided devices for a warehouse worker or something like that.
Yeah, what's important to me when I'm picking a platform, we talk about mobile development in general, is that to pick a platform where you can go wherever your business goes, wherever your next customer, if you're a consulting, wants you to go to, right? They may have an iOS app today, but maybe they want an Android or they want a UWP application, to pick something that's flexible. And that's why I obviously fell in love with C# and our platform. And now you can really do that on any platform. So, yeah.
Cool. Thanks. Okay. Next question up.
If you don't have questions, Jordan will randomly fill in from a list. I don't, you know, we can fill in a few, but yeah, right here.
Yes.
It's going to hurt at first, and then it's going to feel really good.
I'm trying to figure out how I decide, do I go Xamarin or do I go Apache Cordova? I have a website already, but I want to make sure that I get a good user experience and look and feel and performance and access to the some simple hardware APIs, GPS, and camera. Can you explain what are the things that should be informing that decision for me?
Sure. So to repeat back real quick, you were saying that you're getting ready to start out on doing some mobile development, and you're trying to look at Xamarin versus Cordova. Getting at device capabilities is important. Kind of interesting, and a little overview of like what you should consider there. That will help you kind of sway you one way or the other, maybe. Cool.
Or to paraphrase, how do you choose between a client platform, whether that's Xamarin or Cordova, or maybe even native if you wanted to go there, or UWP? So, the way that I usually begin this conversation is like sitting down to talk to you a little bit about what kind of app you're trying to build. Without doing the full consultation here in front of the audience, right? Some of the areas that I typically drive developers to consider first is who's your audience, right? If you are building a consumer app that depends on, like, your entire revenue model depends upon consumers downloading, using every day, and maybe even performing in-app purchases, right? You're making your living 99 cents at a time out of the app store, then you're probably going to want to go with a native app. And that can be done either via native code or via something like Xamarin, right? If you have an affinity with a particular language and, like, you don't really have the time to go out and learn a new language, then there's that consideration as well. I mean, like, we are most productive with the tools that we are already accustomed to using. And so for that reason, the choice between C# and Xamarin or JavaScript/TypeScript might drive you to use something like Cordova or React Native. The other thing that I would typically ask people to consider is going to be what are your demands regarding deployments and publishing? Are you going to go through the App Store, or are you going to go through a private an Intune thing where you're enterprise deploying through sideloading, right? If you're deploying through the App Store, then you probably want to take into consideration what your tolerance is for delays in publishing updates and bug fixes. JavaScript apps have the unique benefit that you can update your app without having to resubmit to the store. And so that can kind of enable you a little bit of freedom to update and publish your app on your own schedule. Anything that's compiled will need to be resubmitted through the store. And so that's inclusive of things like native apps, whether it's Swift or Objective-C or Java or Xamarin. Whereas things like Cordova and React Native, because they're JavaScript based, will allow you to kind of basically update on your own schedule, right? You could also, in terms of deployment, be using something like Hockey App, right, which allows you to deploy to a closed list of users, but they have to be known users to you. And so that might be effective in a line of business type of scenario, but wouldn't be if you're trying to reach a broad range of users, right?
Yeah, I would say for me, so when I started 5 years ago, I was in your spot, I was a C# developer, but like I could lowercase things and write Java, right? And I could figure out Objective-C. Like we could do that if we wanted to. And kind of like Ryan saying, we're best and most productive with the tools that we know and love. I was most productive with Visual Studio. I was most productive with C#. I knew all of .NET. I knew everything. When I started 5 years ago, I didn't know what I was going to do. My boss came into my office and he said, 3 apps. Native, 2 months. Like, that's what he told me. He said, go. Now, I didn't have the tools. 5 years ago, I mean, it was a completely different ball game. I mean, if you were even looking something between a Cordova and a native application, now you have Ionic, you have Angular, like React Native, you have all these different web frameworks. It's like a new flavor every month. For me, it's like, listen, I know iOS, I know Android, I know Xamarin. I consider myself an Android developer that just uses C#. That's what's really cool about what I do is that I'm an Android developer. I just use C#. I'm an iOS developer. I use C#. When I was considering it, I got lucky because Xamarin had just been coming out. It was good. It was perfect timing. And what I liked about it was that I could go look at Apple Docs. I could go look at Android Docs. I could read all of that. I could put it into my application. I get access to every single thing. And Jordan and I actually were just talking about this earlier, just a few hours ago. And yeah, it's like if you have a PhoneGap app, you can get down to all the native functionality through plugins or through writing that Java or Objective-C or Swift code. The difference with Xamarin is that you get to do all of that, but you don't have to write Java, Objective-C, or Swift code or wait for someone to write a plugin. Every API is available to you, and we have same-day support for all the latest versions. I think what's unique, too, about at least my platform that I like is, what is your target market? Are you only phones? Is it only phones? Like, to me, like Xamarin Forms is a great cross-platform UI, like phone, just like getting it out there to everything cross-platform. But do you want to really go and create a great iPad and Android tablet, Android TV, Apple Watch, Apple TV, all these frameworks where we can take our app everywhere, then you got to also be cognizant of what can those frameworks do and can they be optimized for it. So with truly native applications like Xamarin or Java or Objective-C, you're able to do all that. You have access to everything and you have designers for all the different platforms. So I think that's what's also unique. So for me, and of course, if you're a C-sharp shop, this is what I tell everyone. They're like, I don't know what to pick. I'm like, well, are you a C-sharp developer or a web developer? Because that makes your choice a little bit easier. I'm like, don't fire all of your web developers because you want to go write Xamarin apps. Like, you start and see a prototype. Like, see what works best for you. That's what I did 5 years ago. I downloaded Titanium. I downloaded PhoneGap. I downloaded Xamarin. I downloaded Eclipse. And I did all that, and it worked
the
great.
The prototyping thing, that is absolutely true. Yeah. Like, if I was actually just having this conversation, I'm looking in the audience to see if I see them. But we were just having this conversation the other day at the Birds of a Feather lunch, right? And, like, take 2 weeks or take a week, right, and just go out and try out each of them. Like, there's a cost to that. Clearly there's a time cost to that. But spending a little bit of time playing with the technologies to see what feels right for your use case, that will pay off in spades. And plus, it's fun to learn new stuff. It's fun to test things out. So definitely spend time prototyping. Almost every organization that I talk to follows the same path when they're going about creating their first mobile app. They will spend 2 to 3 weeks prototyping on an isolated use case, and then from there, maybe they'll like inch it out, creep it out a little bit more, maybe do a little bit more functionality. And they're usually, when they do that, often, even if they're using a cross-platform technology like Xamarin or Cordova or React Native, they're still just targeting usually one platform at a time. They're just doing Android first, or they're just doing iOS first, just to make sure that they've got their footing on it. And then, because with these cross-platform technologies, it's easy to then just go and deploy to iOS and Android and Windows the next time, often it'll just work. But maybe you got to tweak it a little bit, but that allows you to kind of establish confidence in the technology before you try to like tackle the world. I made a joke earlier that it's going to hurt at first, and like that's because
it's going to be terrible.
It's going to be terrible.
It's like any development, right? You get started with any platform, and you're like, oh, I got to go learn all this stuff. I got to go do this thing. Like, oh, I got provisioning profiles. What is this?
It's like
Apple.
It sucks at first. Yeah. It really does. Like, there's a lot to learn, and because learning is hard, and this is a complicated development with there being multiple platforms that you're typically trying to tackle, and usually in ways that, like, the stores don't necessarily make it easy for you always with provisioning profiles and like to get things set up. So expect that just setting up your dev environment is going to take you a couple days to begin with, and then you're going to take a week or two before you start to find your legs when it comes to development.
Yeah, and I don't know. I've done all the platforms, and what I found is on a team, well, no matter what cross-platform technology you're using, I find it best, I kind of consider myself an Android developer. Like, I love the platform because it's so crazy. But I also write tons of iOS apps. Like, I'm very capable. I like that platform. I don't love it. I like it. And I can bust out Windows apps like it's my job, and it's great. And what I like about that is when I go and work on a team, I work with my coworker Mike James, who's a PM on our team over in the UK. Like, he'll do the iOS, I'll do the Android, work on the back end together because we're like experts, so we can really craft really rich user interfaces. I think it's really important to learn the platforms in general. So no matter if you're even using a cross-platform web framework, there's going to be specific docs on how to spice up and really read the docs. Like, read the Apple doc. Like, I read the Google Material Design docs like once a month. Just like, what are they adding to it? What is Google doing? How does Google want you to build Android apps? How does Apple want you to build iOS apps? Because that's what is going to really wow your users, even if they're internal, because I think that even internally we expect great apps. I mean, I've gone through our internal applications and I've seen different teams and quality, and like even all of our internal apps, you can tell what was a few years ago and then now, and the quality level is really going up, and you can see that, which is really great. So I think that even enterprise, internal, we deserve great apps too. So.
Yeah, I mean, building on that, I really like that idea of like prototyping and stuff like that. For me, the choice of like a platform is really the time to market, right? Like, how fast can I get this out? And that's why a lot of the what are you comfortable with works. But when you're doing that prototype, I would say don't just like do like a throwaway project, right? Like, try to pick one scenario that is a real scenario. Give it to actually customers, like give it to users, like find some small group of people. Try to do a CI build on it. Try to do the whole process, right? Like, when you're evaluating a platform, it's not just like the language and actual crafting of the thing. It's the whole process that goes along behind that, right? Like, your team's going to have to be able to operate with this. You'll have to be able to test it. You'll have to be able to deploy it. And so when you do that prototype, spend the time to see the other tooling as well.
Yeah, it's really important. So we should even back up a little bit. Like, obviously, people may know that Ryan is on, does a lot of Apache Cordova, React Native, like web, C#. But Josh is in this beautiful place that he gets to work with every single application and every single language with HockeyApp. And I just think, Jordan, if it's okay if I steal your emceeing and just have Josh, like, because only a few people knew what HockeyApp was. And I think there's some amazing, when we talk about DevOps and what you just said hit a chord with me, because I go through that with every new app. I'm like, I'm putting it in CI. I'm like, putting it in HockeyApp. So maybe you just explain what HockeyApp is for
maybe
people.
Even explain what DevOps is.
Yeah, what is it? Yeah.
Let's get to DevOps.
Yeah, mobile DevOps.
That's kind of a question. Are you guys familiar with the DevOps thing?
It's mysterious.
Well, everyone familiar? Just saw Donovan present, so now we all know.
Right, you're all experts Donovan. Now. All right.
Donovan crushed it. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
I mean, I like to say my favorite question that's actually on the list that I'm going to steal from here is DevOps a job title? And I like to say, no, it's not a job title. I think I stole this question from maybe Donovan, actually, which is like, you know, the DevOps movement, right? It's just about like the intersection. It's really just kind of a philosophy, right? You have people, you have process, you have tools. DevOps is really about pulling those three items together to really get it. And like I said at the start, right, that time to market is really the key factor for me, right? Like, we all know that Agile is here, that it's a more successful way of deploying more successful software. And the key part of Agile is to make that iterative cycle as fast as you can get it. And that iterative cycle is from basically I have an idea to what I want to build, to I'm able to construct that, I'm able to build it, I'm able to test it, I'm able to reliably change my code so that I can be sure that quality didn't suffer when I rapidly do these changes, and then also that I can actually deploy that into the hands of end users.
Get it into customers' hands. Yeah. Fast as you can. Fast as you can.
Because you'll actually find, like, you know, even, you know, we're all program managers up here. We spend our days trying to predict what customers want, and we're almost always wrong. Like, until you give it to an actual user, until a user actually uses it and tells you what you think, you're almost always wrong about what you think they're going to use it with. So the faster you can get it into their hands, the faster that really takes off.
Yeah, can you talk on exactly how HockeyApp fits in? Because let's say I'm building an app, right? So I create my repo, I create my an app, any app, and then I put in VSTS, right? So now at least it's building. Like, that's important. We've kind of, Donovan showed us that, and he showed some ASP.NET deployments. And now what happens?
So unlike, I guess mobile has some unique challenges for DevOps. Usually DevOps started with kind of the website movement and things like that. But you actually have the web server. It usually sits either in front of you, maybe under your desk if it's some internal server, or at least you can like remote into it, right, and like change what's going on. But the problem with mobile is that your device does not you basically have no control over the end device, right? Like, for a tester, it's in their pocket. If it's a customer, like, it's maybe one of your employees that's walking around. Like, you can't walk up to them and be like, hey, can I just grab a USB cable and hook your phone into this thing? I'm going to load this.
They will not like that. I've tried it. Let me just sideload this for you. Don't touch my phone.
Yeah.
No, not really. It's okay. Don't worry.
Trust me. I'm a developer.
So HockeyApp really steps into that gap, right, and tries to basically provide this tooling set that lets you to pull in the various tools. So it integrates with any build server that you have, whether it's Jenkins or an Xcode machine, whether it's VSTS. Pulls those builds in. It'll host them in the cloud. It deploys them out to the end-use device to really enable that quick deployment. And then the other half of that thing is really, you know, once you've deployed it to a customer, you need to learn something from them, right? Like we all talk build, measure, learn, right? We can't, I think oftentimes we try to skip that last step there and just do the build, measure. So
just build.
I just build.
So really that learning,
crushing
right,
code
requires you to do some monitoring, right? That's things like understanding the crash rate. HockeyApp's going to collect every crash for you. It's going to give you a usable stack trace so you know what is my quality, not just during testing, but what's my quality in production. And it's going to provide that ability to do user metrics so that you can see how frequently are people installing this app, how often do they engage with it, what kind of behaviors are they taking, what pages are they viewing. And finally, it really offers some tools around like you know feedback. So just ask a customer. Allow the customer to talk directly to you. You know, don't create any barriers between your development team, your product team, and the end customers. Like, let them talk directly to you. Let your developers talk right back to them. Let them understand the pain points that the customers are going through or the successes that they actually have. Yeah, so HockeyApp basically works as a SaaS offering, so it's a cloud-based service. So we basically have two mechanisms there. One is we do a lot of work to make it as easy as possible. I mean, if you look at VSTS, there's just a built-in build task that will upload directly to HockeyApp. So we make it super easy to get your binary packages uploaded into the cloud. And then ultimately, it's just a URL. So you navigate to the URL on your mobile device, you click the one button to install, it installs under that device. We have some other stuff. We have some control mechanisms so you can control access. This is an internal app. Maybe you don't want it to have public access to everybody in the world. So we can do some authentication, user management, and stuff like that. But ultimately, it comes down to some like an app to do the install or just like a URL. You can share that URL. Yeah, so we do a lot of work there. We can't get around the Apple system, so it's still an Apple device. It still has the Apple restrictions. So you do have to do an Apple provisioning profile. But what we do is we do a lot of stuff to enable that. So specifically, if you're doing ad hoc provisioning, then when you onboard to the HockeyApp system, we're going to go ahead and collect those UDID device IDs for every device that you have as a tester or someone looking to install. We're going to provide that back to you so that you can very easily just go right into your Apple developer account. You click on the HockeyApp portal to download all your UDIDs. You take that CSV file, you just import it into the developer account, and now your provisioning profile is set up just like you're looking for. So instead of having to try to email an end mm-hmm. user and then explain to them what a UDID is and where it is actually on the iPhone that you can extract that from, yeah. We'll go ahead and collect that stuff for you.
To give you an idea, I used it for the first time, I don't know, maybe about 6 months ago, a little bit longer than that. No, 8 months ago. And it took me 2 hours to get everything set up. It was super easy. Like, you guys did a great job with, like, making it. Like, I was able to sign up, do a build, even set up CI, and get it all going in just a short afternoon. So kudos there. Those are really good.
Yeah, and you don't even have to integrate into CI. If you don't have CI set up yet, you can drag and drop a file into the browser. And I should say, so if anyone's not done iOS development, we talk provisioning profiles. It'll be the joy of your life when you get to that part. Okay. But essentially, Apple locks developer accounts to say you can register 100 devices for development, and those 100 devices you register with a very unique ID for each phone. This essentially locks it so you can't just freely distribute your app. Now, if you're in an enterprise, you actually register for an enterprise account, and then you can do in-house deployment. So for instance, when I was doing our Evolve Conference application, when it would build in VSTS, it would be signed automatically with our enterprise license or provisioning profile. And that is a special flag that Apple gives you to say, anyone can install this, but they better be inside your company. Like, you know, you can't just freely distribute it. So that actually helps. So if you're in that thing, you're like, oh, man, I got to do this thing, just go ask your company for an enterprise. It's $300 instead of $100, totally worth it. So anyways, a little off topic, but it's mobile development, right? It's making sense of that. And Android, you don't have that problem. So, yeah. Actually, Windows, you guys did some work on Windows 10, I think, where you just download the provisioning profile is the HockeyApp, like provisioning profile. So that's actually even really easy on Windows 10.
Yeah, it's definitely smoothed out in Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. Actually, it even got even better. We partnered with the Windows 10 team. The provisioning profile is actually inside the AppX bundle, so your certificate will actually install. You just double-click on it, and it basically installs your package. The nice thing there is, like, that Windows 10 mobile and the desktop story, right? You upload the same package. That package installs on both places. You just click the thing. So you can basically upload your package and you get that multi-thing. I don't think we've tried it on the HoloLens yet. We keep trying to tell our manager to buy us a HoloLens so we can test, but that hasn't
come
through
yet. We need about three different units to test that out.
I asked my manager. I was like, it's only like 5,000 or 3,000. And he's like, no.
But I could put the conference app on it.
So I'm... So I'm going to use my executive power real quick and throw a Channel 9 guy at the first question there around decision matrix kind of discussion that got us going. We have another question up in the back. Nope. I saw that hand first right over here, so I'll go to you, and then we'll go over there. Okay, so the question is, or the statement first, is that Apache Cordova? Sorry, go ahead.
Samsung for HoloLens, augmented reality, so on and so
forth. Unity.
Yeah.
So real quick for everybody online listening, the statement was that Xamarin and Cordova are for business applications. The question is, what would we recommend for game development, and are like HoloLens, augmented reality, for example, correct? And to which, Ryan, you were saying Unity.
Yeah, we have a huge number of developers who are like gangbusters in love with Unity. I'm not a game developer, and so I have not used it myself. But I know that the Unity developers that I've talked to, I've met very few developers who are so in love with their platform as those developers. There's some special kind of pixie dust happening in that that just really seems to sing.
Yeah, I would say it's actually interesting if you're I would definitely say I've seen a ton of Unity stuff. If you're not a Unity Kool-Aid drinker, I would say it's actually interesting. I just saw that Microsoft actually made a deal with the Quake 4 engine actually to port it over. And so I believe there's actually GitHub fork that you can actually use for the Quake 4 engine. So if you're doing stuff like game development, HoloLens, it's been ported over, I think, as well to the .NET Core framework.
Yeah, we've done something really interesting at Xamarin. Which is, so when I actually started as a game developer. I used to write games for the Xbox 360. That was before I went to go write printer software. That was my background. It was all C++ at the time. This was beginning of Xbox 360, so it was all C++. And then Microsoft came out with this amazing technology. Some of you may have heard of it. It's XNA. Is anyone familiar with XNA? Yeah, cool. So XNA came out, and it was really cool. It really enabled a big indie movement on Xbox 360 and for the PC. Really awesome work there. And there's an amazing team, and a lot of the team that did this, not XNA, but this thing I'm about to talk about, now works at Xamarin, now Microsoft, which is Monogame. Essentially, think of Mono as C#. It can run everywhere and run .NET everywhere. What they did with Mono is they ported XNA to every single platform. So if you're familiar with XNA, you can actually use XNA entire API to write Windows 10, Windows 8, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android, any application can run it, PlayStation. And in fact, that's how like Transistor is built, Bastion was built, Towerfall, not Titanfall, Towerfall by Matt Makes Games up in Canada, one of my favorite games. It's awesome. So that's a really powerful engine. In general, so there's a lot of people. You can check out Monogame, just Google it, and you'll find it. We also have some other game engines. And the nice thing here is everything's literally powered by Mono,
Unreal.
Right?
Unreal.
Unreal. We did. Is anyone familiar with Cocos 2D? Yeah. A few of you. Cocos 2D is a super if you're an Objective-C or Swift developer, like people are just like gangbusters because that was what it was originally made for. Because Cocos is like the Apple. There's Cocos Touch, essentially, is what iOS is. There was a lot of variations of Cocos 2D. Essentially, it's a very powerful 2D game engine. And it went through, 2D, and there are Cocos. There's a C++ version. There's, all these different versions, different languages. We took this Cocos XNA thing. We said, well, Mono Game's great. And we created something called Cocos Sharp, which took the entire 2D game engine of Cocos 2D and ported it to iOS and Android with Xamarin. And even desktop, and I've done a lot of videos on that. So there's so many options. Unity is probably the most popular, but if you're like, I just want to jam on code and you don't want to install other stuff, there's a lot of options out there in the Microsoft ecosystem, actually, which is cool, and they run everywhere. Uh-huh. So I just want to point out some other things. It's not all Unity, but it's a good thing.
There's a lot of Unity.
There's a lot of Unity going on, yeah.
So there had been another question up this side of things, in the far back over here.
Xamarin. Yeah.
So again, you're asking if you're writing an app and performance is a consideration, you're looking at Native or Cordova, which one should you use, right?
Yeah, there's a performance analysis that Harry Chung, who is an ex-Googler, or maybe even a Googler currently, he did some performance analysis. He did multiple things, every year he updates it, and so it's independent. Performance analysis are really hard because it's what hardware are you doing, what are you actually doing? Back and forth, and he did some analysis of it between It was actually interesting. He did Objective-C, and then he did Objective-C plus Swift, because you can mix the two, and then he did just Swift, and then I did C++. C++ always wins. Like, that's going to be the most performant ever, because of C++. No one's going to write C, like that, you know. I don't want to manage my memory. Come on now. Yeah. That's crazy talk. But you could ingest some C++. That's fine. But to write a whole app in C++, if you do it, props to you. But it was really interesting. And then he compared all the different, you know, different web technologies out there. And what he actually found is that Xamarin was always on par with Objective-C or Java. In the case of Android, we were often actually faster than Java, because the same code that you could execute in .NET on the mono runtime would be faster than the Delvecker Art runtime, which is actually interesting. And what you need to take into consideration is like, look at our performance tips and tricks. Like, we have an entire thing of the highly tune your application. And in any framework that you could use, even if you write it in native language, you can still run into performance issues. We can all write bad, terrible code.
You can write really terrible code.
Yeah.
Really terrible code.
So there's those implications. And the nice thing with Xamarin is that we're compiling down to the native, the ARMS assemblies and APK files and everything like that on Android. It's like iOS. We compile down your C# to IL to bytecode to bitcode, actually. And we send that through the same exact LLVM compiler and optimizer that Apple uses. It's the LLVM upstream that's available. So it's literally the same exact code, ARM machine code, that's running natively on the platform. So you can really tweak and tune. We have profilers to help a lot. And I think that some tooling like React Native gets a lot closer. Cordova, like things are getting closer. Like, browsers are running fast, but the question for me, and maybe Ryan can tackle this, I'll say, you know, for me at least, I know that if I'm writing a super performance Xamarin app, that it's going to be as performant as that device can possibly be. Sure. How do you guys tackle browser performance? Because I think for me, if you're going cross-platform with a browser, how do you guys tackle that?
So I want to give a couple of examples here of organizations that I know that have created games using Cordova. Specifically here, Zynga, for those of you that know Zynga, everyone knows Zynga? San Francisco, they did, was it Farmville? And it was super popular on Facebook and all that stuff. So they ended up using Cordova in order to create their mobile games, because they wanted to reappropriate a lot of the same code that they were using that was being displayed in the browser, like in the desktop browser, right? And so for them, it was essentially casual games with some amount of graphics. And those, you know, the graphics were clearly making them money, right? But it was not the, you know, Duke Nukem first-person shooter
60 frames per second.
Yeah, right? Instead, these are casual games where you're, you know, maybe doing solitaire, something like that, right? And so for those, a lot of the game ends up being created inside of a canvas or using WebGL. And inside of that, you can actually get 60 frames per second. You can get some pretty awesome stuff. The difference is that then you're not really working with HTML anymore, right? A lot of the times when people think about creating a Cordova app, they're thinking about working with div tags and span tags and H1s, and they're thinking about how much easier that makes development when you're working with a simple declarative language and you've got some nice JavaScript behind it. Now, when you start moving over to a canvas, now you're actually working with an imperative language where you've essentially got to redraw on every refresh, right? You've got to tell that circle, that square, where to go. And so it ends up looking a lot less like what people normally think of as web development, and actually starts looking like game development that you would do, right, in any other kind of 2D, 3D gaming system. And so that's why I kind of say it's not exactly Cordova development anymore, because that's not what people think about when they think about Cordova development.
Yeah, it's now, like you're like a framework, right? It's, you know, like people. Did anyone go to the Xamarin Forms session with Nick Landry? A few of you did. Yeah. The Xamarin Forms is a cross-platform abstraction that we create. It's a big library. And a lot of people, when you think of Xamarin, they'll be like, oh, well, Xamarin Forms, oh, I'm just going to write everything in XAML, and I magically get an iOS, Android, and Windows app. And when I talk about that native performance, I'm talking about traditional Xamarin, building an iOS storyboard, Android XML file, not the cross-platform UI. Because once you add a framework, which if you're writing to Canvas, it's not really a framework, right? But when you start adding, well, now we got this layer and this layer, and Xamarin Forms is a layer. It has data binding. It has navigation.
You're getting closer to the metal.
You're getting farther away from the metal with those frameworks that you add on. So like a Xamarin Forms app will never be as fast as performant as a traditional Xamarin app, right? Which will be as close, if not on par, with a Java or Objective-C type application. Yeah. So be aware if you're like, oh, James said Xamarin's the best, and Ryan agrees. And then you're like, oh, the Xamarin Forms, like, you know, it's not quite, you know, it's really good. We're doing a lot of perf improvements. So I think it's really good. I think you'd make like 80% of your apps with it. But, you know, just be aware of that, too, in any framework. Because I think as .NET developers, at least me, everyone here, like, I like to install a lot of NuGets. I like to install all these things, like I'll, you know, dependency services, IOC. Let's do this. It's going to be great. You know, that has costs. That has some overhead.
Every additional package that you add adds a performance cost to it. Like, especially on mobile devices where the memory is constrained, just like be really cautious and really judicious about every additional package that you add in. We did a pretty in-depth analysis of performance for Cordova apps, comparing different frameworks. In that particular case, it was React versus Angular, and then also testing out different plugins. And there's a lovely set of spit out of all of the different analysis that we did and a set of recommendations that you can find on our documentation. Just go to taco.visualstudio.com. But the end kind of result of it was that the more memory you took up, the slower your application got, and it started throttling down from 60 frames per second, you know, down to 50, down to 40, down to 30. And sometimes you didn't even have to necessarily use the framework, just adding in a reference to Angular. All of a sudden, yep, there went 5 frames per second, right? Having said that, at least for Cordova apps, I would say, like, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, they give you so much power and so much rope to hang yourself that it is very possible to create a really terrible non-performant app. While you should be judicious about the frameworks that you add in, use one, because framework authors, especially ones who have optimized their frameworks for mobile devices, have put a lot of time, just like we put in a lot of time with Xamarin Forms, into making sure that those controls are performant on mobile devices. And so going out there and trying to create an infinite scroll yourself, you're going to have to put in a lot of hours to get as performant as you can using a framework like whether it's Ionic, which I talked about earlier today, or Onsen UI, or any of the other ones that are out there. Like, those developers, I know because I talk to them at least once a week, have spent a lot of time really fine-tuning those to, and sometimes perform some amazing gymnastics in code to make sure that you've got good, fast, performant controls. So don't use them sparingly, but use them because they're your friend. Next question.
Next question. Another one here. Oh, in front again. Go ahead.
So with that statement about performance and whatnot, probably it's best to test that. How do you handle testing across the wide fragmentation of devices, specifically on Android, in a CI scenario so that you can do it repeatedly, specifically when you're using hardware devices as a part of your application like the camera?
Okay. And so your question is how playing off of performance testing would be important to look across a myriad of devices. And so your question is, how would you test across all those different device profiles, hardware devices? I'm assuming like in an automated fashion, possibly. If not, like, would be some recommendations on a strategy to do that?
Cool. Yeah, I think when it comes to the testing and stuff like that, I actually find that the most important thing is to test on real devices. Like, you actually really have to run the application. Like, the emulators just aren't sufficient for that level of information. And so you really need to come up with some sort of mechanisms for running that. So you can do a couple of different approaches. You can buy a lot of devices, if that's possible for you, in which case you can run them. I'm actually going to let James here talk about Xamarin Test Cloud, which is exactly targeted at that scenario. Or the other thing is really to do like a beta test community, right? Like, if you can get a subset of your total users that represents the thing, and so, you know, if you, especially like with HockeyApp, right, you can tell what devices your your thing really runs on. If you can find like an early adopter community or doing something like Feature Flag where you do a progressive rollout where you release new features but you release it to a small set of your audience first and then see how it goes. Like if you don't have the ability to get access to devices, you can kind of use your own customer community as like an early test community. But I think the important part is it's got to be real devices. Like the emulators don't represent the actual behaviors on all the devices, and it, like we can probably all tell lots of stories about times where developers have discovered that their application performs differently on this specific device for this specific hardware reason.
Samsung.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically any Samsung device or your Apple, it can possibly look completely different and act and crash randomly for no reason. Classic Samsung.
But we do have a solution for this.
Yeah, so there's actually two things, and actually be very aware what an emulator is and a simulator. It seems very like, James, I know that. I didn't know that 5 years ago because I was like, man, my iOS app is amazing. Like, it's scrolling great. Yeah, because it's using the entire power of my machine. An iOS simulator is actually a full simulator. It's not a boxed environment like an Android emulator is. And even our Android emulators now are Hyper-V, so it's even crazy. It's like, you know, super powerful. But like literally, when you write a file to disk, it's writing it to your Mac, which is kind of crazy. It's all like the sandbox.
Behind an SSD, right?
Yeah, it's on an SSD. Like, man, this is a great app. Like, yeah, it's using 16 gigs of RAM. Yeah. Of course, it's great. And honestly, I took a screenshot 4 years ago. I was releasing my first apps, and I thought it was so great. I took this screenshot of 7 devices. I was like, tested it on all these devices. And I released it to the like you upload it to Google, and they go, oh, this app supports 9,542 devices. And you're like, that's going to be expensive.
Yes.
So what I always do is I'm an Android person, so I always have the latest Android device. I'll just like give Google all my money, and I like just want the latest and greatest because I also, a lot of the apps that I create for conferences and stuff, like developers are using, and they're on the Android and beta, and I want to have access to the latest builds. You actually have to be concerned with that on Android, where not every device gets every update. And Nexus devices, I always recommend every developer have one, because you're going to get all the security updates. And in fact, those security updates can break your app, too. It's crazy. And then have an older device, like an older 2 or 3 year old device, just to do some performance testing on it. And what we did at Xamarin is we said, like, listen, this is an issue. Like, this exact question came up with every developer talking about, no matter what framework they were using, whether it was Cordova or Java or Objective-C or Xamarin, they said, I don't want to buy 2,000 devices. So we actually, there's this framework called Calabash, which is like a scripting UI framework library. It pairs really well with Cucumber, which is a test automation script, scripting thing, which is cool. And that team came over and they built this thing called Xamarin UI Test, which is a way of writing C# scripts, automated UI scripts to say, tap this button, do this thing, all ID-based. And we made it so you can run those all locally on your own devices, just like an N-unit test, right? This is my business logic, but this is my UI test. And then what we did is we built the world's largest device lab with over 2,300 unique iOS and Android devices, which enables you to select what devices you want your app to run on. And they're real physical devices. They're not emulators. They're not simulators. They're real devices. And I've given talks at this at VS Live. There's a really great talk by Carl Krakow, who's the head of Xamarin Test Cloud on our Xamarin Evolve website. He did one, and he had pictures of the lab, which I got to walk through in Denmark. It's glorious.
Yeah, it's cool. Super incredible.
It's super incredible.
Imagine, like, you know, static room, you know, all white and, you know,
lab coat,
floors, yeah. Lab coats, all that stuff. And you've got, like, all these server kind of things. But instead of there being blade servers or something like that in there, instead you've got all these little mobile devices, these little, you know, USB cords coming out. It's very pretty.
Yeah, and that ties into CI, actually. So when we build applications and I build applications, the very first thing I do is I'm not going to have, like, 100 tests, but I'm going to test the normal scenarios that I don't want to break. Log in. Log out. Like, does it do the main thing that the app should do? Like, I was doing the My Driving application I showed during my session, and I was like, hey, like, can you record a trip? Can you log in? Because if you can't do that, can't really ship the app. That seems terrible. Can you go to the pro? Can you navigate? Like, you know, and you can inspect all the elements. So when you build, before you deploy a hockey app, is you would send it to the test cloud. And in fact, when you go on VSTS or other services like BitRise or Jenkins, you can do this on any of them, any of the services. We're very open. You literally say, like, I'm going to build this app. I'm going to send it to Test Cloud. I'm going to send it to Hockey App. And the cool part there is it's any app. So whether you have some apps that are PhoneGap.
Native app, and PhoneGap,
React,
it can be anything.
Anything. It doesn't matter. And that's a paid product. So it's something to look into if you're concerned about it. But I'll tell you, the current pricing is like, I think it's $100 a month or something on the website.
Pricing recently.
Something like that. But you literally have access to thousands of devices and of every flavor.
It'll help you, like, say, you know what, I don't really want to test against all 1,000 or 2,000 devices. Like, I really just want to test against the 10 most common ones for my geographic region. It'll kind of help you select the most popular devices so that you can feel as if you've got a reasonable coverage on a nightly basis. And then maybe just before you deploy, you decide to go out and, you know, go to the big kind of bank of devices and go to more.
Yeah, what I do is I go into my analytics, like inside of Hockey App, you can see what devices are the most popular, and that's the test suite that I run, right? So you literally know, like with these services that we have, what are people actually using? Like, use that information. Like, we collect all this information, and like, this is a perfect use case. Yeah. This is like, what are people running? Cool. So like, every build I in a feature branch, I run against one device, and then push to master, I do 10, and then every night I do 20. And then you could do more, like 100 or something like that against. But that one, instant results. So I'm just like, hey, did I break anything? Because I just push code. Sometimes I just don't want to wait for test to finish.
Testing is for suckers.
Yeah. It may run faster in the test club by the time I actually run it. So
I think it's important here to realize, too, when we talk about that DevOps and that iterative cycle, right? Like, we make these comments a lot about like CI and stuff like, it's almost always a human that's going to be the slow part of your process. So the majority of time, like, if you want to get the biggest speed up in your iterative cycle for deploying, it's eliminating the human steps, right? And so Test Cloud lets you eliminate that physical device testing, right? Like, you don't have to deploy it by hitting the deploy button on your computer with the USB cable connected and then swap to the cable next to it, right? Like, it runs in parallel. They're already connected. You can link it directly to your CI. So you just check in code. It triggers automatically to do a build. It triggers automatically to do the test. You get those results in seconds, not hours, right? Like, that speed advantage is just really compelling.
Yeah, I'll say it. Go ahead. Yeah.
What about with the camera? How do you test from a cloud camera capturing image or something?
So question there is, can you use native device capabilities like the camera in Xamarin Test Cloud? Yeah. Actually, I haven't tried. Do you know if you can?
Yeah, it's tricky. So you're able to like mock geolocations pretty easily. There's an API to do that. So let's say you had a geospatial application. Like, oh, now I want to port to Orlando. I want to port to Redmond. You can mock out locations or rotations. Camera features are a little bit tricky. Essentially, what we do is we think of it like mocking. So if you think about when you're running NUnit tests and you're like, oh, I'm going to go hit this database. Well, you're probably not actually going to go hit your database when you're running NUnit tests like all the time, or you're going to hit some dev server. So you have access. Like, if you run the code, it is your app running on a real device. So yes, it will totally open, and it will probably be looking down at a black screen because it's face down. So it'll totally be there, though. And in that scenario, that's where the manual testing comes in. Like, you're going to actually see if the camera thing comes up, if it happens, things like that. And you're probably going to be able to cover most scenarios of your app. But if you're like, I am building an application that only scans barcodes, like, well, that test case probably isn't covered. But test all the other areas around that one test case. Right. Yeah. To build, make sure that, hey, listen, I'm gonna have to test this one thing. But if you want to see if, like, the camera opens, it'll totally open.
But then you're not really using the camera, right? If the goal here is that you have to test the camera part of it rather than insert a mock, then
yeah, and that's what I would do actually. That's a good question about the mock or comment. Is what I would do if I had the camera is I would open the camera, then attempt to shut the camera, and then return the mock image as if it was successful. Yeah, the app doesn't care what the photo was unless you were analyzing, and it would just be a black image. Or maybe it's the other devices. I don't know.
Let me correct. Yeah.
You see something.
See some guy in a lab coat.
White bunny suits,
Yeah, they may even put stickers over the actual cameras just so for security purposes. And security is obviously a major concern, so we wipe all the devices after every test run. So.
Cool. So there was a question in the back of the room up there I saw, and definitely line up. We've got about another... Joe, just under 20 minutes left, too, so if you still have questions, start queuing up in your head. Okay. Back here.
Yeah, so actually, so I think your question was around, like, you have a large population of existing users, and you're looking to do kind of a back end breaking change, and you're looking at basically, how to kind of orchestrate the change to come there. So I think there's kind of two ways. One is that if you're really doing a breaking change, and you're not going to support the old version configuration, which does happen, I think, HockeyApp's actually a potential solution for you. So if you're deploying through HockeyApp does have the ability to control which versions are valid. And so what you can actually do is invalidate the previous version. So your users will get an in-app notification that there's a new version available, but if they decline to upgrade, then you can stop the running of the old version. So it's a way to basically get all your users to jump to that latest version. And so if you really are doing a true breaking change where you're not going to support the old applications running, then I would recommend doing something like that. The other thing is, maybe I can get Ryan here to talk a little bit about the code push stuff there. No, so I think I would say that there is no. HockeyApp has some of the largest apps in the world deploying out.
There's two parts of HockeyApp, and this is where I know exactly why you just were asking that question. So HockeyApp is two purposes. There's the actual deployment part, and then HockeyApp actually has an SDK, and that SDK can work on the actual app store itself, and it will detect if there is a new or older version. You can actually. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. So, for instance, you can actually invalidate things inside of HockeyApp. So, if you have a new version, you can actually say, have HockeyApp be like, no, the next version on the App Store is required that everyone updates. All right. So, the user launches your app on their own version 1, which you're about to break, but you've launched version 2 of the App Store, which has the new working version. Maybe 50% of your users have updated. You have the HockeyApp SDK installed, and you tell HockeyApp that this new version is required to be installed and running. When the users open your application and says, hey, there's a new version installed, they say, hey, I want that. Takes them directly to the App Store, and then they install the latest version. Else if they hit no, and if it's a required update, then they can't run the application. It's up to your flow.
I do think you still have to be careful, right? If you're really doing a back-end server change, there are ways to encourage a user to use a new app version, but the app is on their device, right? There's no way to really control that, right? Unless you're doing something like the mobile device management where you can actually remotely change to that version, there's no way to synchronize that, right? There's just ways of disabling it or doing pop-ups to encourage them or, changing the code so that the old versions don't work potentially, but ultimately, those old versions you're going to find, especially if you're going to an uncontrolled environment like the public app stores, you're not going to be able to accurately control those old devices, and you're going to have users who use year-old versions. It's just going to happen.
If they're offline, though. So long as if it's the moment that they connect to the internet, you can force it.
Right? So the other.
The other option is code push. And so code push is uniquely available to React Native and Cordova because it relies on a sort of a caveat in the store policies for iOS and Android that allows uncompiled code, so JavaScript here, to be dynamically updated without having to resubmit it to the store. Through this, we're able to offer a service called Code Push that essentially allows you to dynamically push updates to your app by under the covers. What it's really doing is there's you push your package up to Azure, then all the mobile devices on whatever event you choose, maybe it's every time that the app gets opened, maybe it's on a background thread and it's on a timer every minute, or maybe it's when they click a button, could be anything. But either way, it pings Azure, looks for an update, and then there's a number of different criteria that you can place on that update. So when an update is available, you can mark it as mandatory, the exact same workflow as with Hockey App. And when it recognizes that there's an update, you can force it to automatically install. And that will essentially replace all of the contents of your web assets, which in a React Native or a Cordova app is really all of the assets, minus your plugins. And then it will rehydrate using the new assets that were downloaded from Azure. So through this, it allows you to force updates. But again, you know, if the user stays offline in perpetuity, like clearly it will never get those. But as soon as they're connected, if you've got a back-end server change that you're making that that application depends upon, clearly they're going to be online. And so you can force it that way. So you got two options. Hockey App, which works with anything. There's even SDKs available for Cordova on that one. Or if you want to kind of force it through your own kind of like code push kind of scenario where you don't have to redeploy to the store every time, then you can use code push. And so if you want to, for a code push update, you could do 20 a day. You could do one every 10 minutes if you wanted to. Your users would probably hate you, but you could deploy multiple times just on your own cadence.
Yeah, for and since Xamarin apps are native apps, right, we don't get that loophole, if you will, in the policy. It's not even a loophole. It's in the policy, essentially, from Apple. And Apple and Google's totally fine. It's just whatever. It's Wild West. That's why I love it. I will say, though, like in general, since our apps are native applications, we follow and we've the same guidelines that an Objective-C or Java app go through. So you're going to have to re-upload your app and hope that your users install. It's been a lot better. As I've been doing it for 5 years now, and I'll say the update rates have gotten a lot better, mostly because both Apple and Google have turned on automatic updates. So most users just leave it on. And when it connects to Wi-Fi, their apps just update automatically. They don't even know. No one reads release notes. It's kind of sad because we all put a lot of time. That's why everything is just bug fixes, right? Like bug fixes, like cool. That's why no wonder no one reads our release notes. But yeah, it's I read them all. I actually go into all the apps.
I read my release notes every
time.
Trust
me, most people don't. It's kind of interesting. So I've actually seen it on Android. Inside the dashboards of both iOS and Android, you can see your installs, your updates, and what's actually being used in the wild, which is very interesting. Same thing in Hockey App, you can see, and there's different metrics that are out there. So take those in consideration as you're going. Like, how long does it take people to update? And if you push out a bad update, that's totally possible, too. I've definitely broken an app on iOS one time by having a bad update. It's totally possible. And in that instance, Apple's gotten a lot better. So 5 years ago, it was a week, 2 week, 3 week, who knows? And then if it got rejected, it's all over again. Apple made some fundamental shifts this year around WWDC, their conference, and actually before it. So now updates are reviewed usually within 24 hours and then pushed out. Google is 2 hours because they do automated testing sweeping on it, and Windows is under 2 hours too, usually for app updates. So if you're worried about like, oh, it's up there, it's about do you want to force like, you know, that update to somebody, and then you would use, for instance, like the Hockey App scheme with the Xamarin application to enforce now, that.
Does the Hockey App SDK allow you to roll back a mandatory update automatically, or like, is there a rollback update or no?
That's an excellent question. You know, I don't think I've tried that scenario myself. I think maybe it's no.
Yeah. Code push has a rollback. Code push definitely has a rollback. So if you, I mean, you know, shoot yourself in the foot and miss a semicolon, I don't know, whatever it is you're gonna do, you realize that you've done something wrong, you can roll back and make again that rollback mandatory and automatically.
Yeah, that might be my next feature to add there.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, be aware of what a rollback essentially means. It's still a new version of the app. You can't. I wish, that'd be so nice, is it literally in the app portal, all the versions are there. You'd be cool, be like, no, just kidding. Once you release it, it's in the wild. You need to increase your version. How the app stores work now is they don't really install the entire package. They do diffing of packages, so it always rolls forward, never back. It's actually really, that's a whole session of how app stores work and do diffing and install and AOT stuff. It's crazy. There's some good Google I/O videos from Google if you're really interested how that Android team works and does diffs. But yeah, I've had to do that before, where literally what I've done is in my VSTS or in my GitHub, I would say, hey, roll back to yesterday, and then build a new release, and then go push that out, and just have to increase the build numbers. You can always go forward, never back.
So I'm keeping a tally of some nominations here for these two guys. But let's see, about a little less than 10 minutes to go. Let's start with one last question from over here.
Over there.
Billy Hollis? Hundred percent of what? One more time.
So you're saying XAML? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
XAML.
Okay. Yeah. So your question is, you heard a comment from presenter Billy on saying that Xamarin doesn't 100% support XAML, correct? And you're curious if it will or when that looks like.
Yeah. What about that, James?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So when you're building apps with Xamarin, right? There's two approaches: the traditional native approach, which would be iOS storyboards and Android XML files, where there's no XAML involved. UWP would be the UWP there. Xamarin Forms would be the framework where you can build a cross-platform user interface in XAML. It is purely XAML, so it has a lot of features of XAML itself: data triggers, binding triggers, things like that. XAML is just an XML markup. It's the schema, and it's what you do with that schema. So for instance, if you look at like visual states, right, that's just a feature of Windows 10 XAML, right? I mean, that's a feature of it. You have visual states and things like that. And as Xamarin Forms evolves, it's been out for about 2 years now, we've added a lot to the framework itself. Like I said, data triggers, binding triggers. We have actually special things that Windows 10 doesn't have. We have on platform. So you can say, is it on iOS, do this? Is it on Android, do that? It's our XAML. It's our schema, I should say. It's still XAML. The one thing it doesn't support would be a newer feature called like XBind, for instance, which is a different way of binding. But we support all sorts of normal binding, string formatting, things like that. And as Xamarin Forms continues to grow, we're adding more and more features to it. Probably the most common request is like visual states. But the thing is, visual states don't really exist necessarily on iPad and iPhone, which makes it really hard because visual states are more of a Windows-y type thing. So they're trying to adapt that in some way. So I think you'll see more and more come closer between like what a Windows XAML is and what a Xamarin Forms XAML is. But just know that a lot of it's there. And definitely check out the book. We have a whole book by Charles Petzold. Anyone know who Charles Petzold is? He's amazing. Yeah, he works now, I guess, for Microsoft. Yeah. He wrote an entire book on Xamarin Forms. It's like that thick. It's free. You can get it on Amazon, iBooks. So just go to Xamarin.com and click on the Xamarin Forms thing. You'll see the book there by Charles Petzold. It's pretty great. So that'll take you through all the features so you could compare and see what's there or not. But we're always adding. Yeah. And it's open source. It's open source, so you can leave feedback.
You can totally add features in. Yeah. Do it. Send a pull request.
Cool. So with our last 5 minutes here, maybe each of you a quick closing thought, and I'd be interested in knowing if you look a year ahead at VS Live, what might be something we'd be talking about, like what's the future look like here? I know it's 5 minutes to go over there, so I want to start with James this time and then the middle end.
Yeah, sure. So I will hope everyone had an amazing VS Live and hope that you come back for more and more. For me, I love mobile development. I love the power that we have as developers is a great time. I always said that every day. I always say it's the best time to be a developer, and it's always the best time to be a mobile developer. I think now when you think of Xamarin, if you want a purely native, true application that can go anywhere on all the devices, it's the best of all worlds. You get the best of everything, and then you can even bring in Java and iOS libraries into your Xamarin application, and I think it's amazing for all the integrations that we have with Azure and then, of course, to go to Apple TV or Android TV or any of these platforms. If I look forward, man, I've been saying it for a while, but I still think that there's huge potential in wearables. I think that everyone's all buzz crazy on VR and HoloLens. Wearables are something that's more consumable, I think, but it's maybe not necessarily the watch. Like, what's going to go next? Google has a lot of cool projects. going on in that space. So be like, look out for some unique opportunities if you're looking to get into mobile, because it's still an untapped place. I don't think we know what to do there yet. I don't even know if Google and Apple know what to do there yet. But I think it's like this huge untapped market. So yeah, I think if I was going in, I think VR is cool, but I think wearables and IoT are probably more consumable today.
How about you, Josh?
Yeah, as for me, I mean, I really like the mobile DevOps, right? Like, I really like the agile stuff. I see DevOps as just the evolution of like the agile breaking out of just software development into the entire like delivery platform, right? Like, seeing it. And I think the DevOps movement, especially in mobile DevOps, I think is at a new place. I think it's just now kind of coming out. There's a lot of people doing a lot of exciting stuff in the area. I think what it ends up breaking down to is you still have to kind of figure out the pieces yourself, and if you really want to do DevOps, you have to put the pieces together to get the whole DevOps story to play together. And I think the exciting thing is I think we're going to start to see a lot more of a coherent story. We're going to mature a little bit in the industry where rather than having to just kind of ask questions over every single component of the DevOps flow, it's going to start to be more of a coherent story. And so I'm really excited to see, like, you know, where a developer can just focus on writing that code and have that, like, you know, the whole process just be like automated and flow, like all the way to an end customer, end user, really kind of collapse down.
Cool. Right.
I don't know about you guys, but I am just freaking tickled to death that the kind of the Apples of the world and the Googles of the world, and even for that matter, the Microsofts of the world, are kind of losing their stranglehold on these kind of siloed stores that only allow use of a single language. That we are able to use cross-platform development, anything, whether it's JavaScript or C# or something else. Like, that to me is critical for us as developers to get our creative works and our business works out into the hands of as many people as possible, and really just kind of to democratize the act of development. And so what I suspect that we're going to hear more of in the next year, maybe if we're all sitting here in these chairs again next year, is we're going to hear a lot more success stories and a lot more interest in cross-platform development at large, as we start to think about ways to use these new languages on all levels of the stack, whether it's kind of on the server side for services, whether it's on the client, or it's in kind of the DevOps side of things, where we're starting to craft test cases for Xamarin Test Cloud and the like. Like, just being able to take those same tools to all layers of the stack is super, super important. And I see that happening with web. I see it happening with C#. And I suspect we'll actually even start to see a little bit more of it with Swift as well, if I may throw a dart at the board and say where we're going to see stuff.
That's all you did there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks to everybody in the room for being with us, everyone online. You fine gentlemen, thank you for being here with me. Yeah.
Thank you.
If you
Jordan.
Have other questions,
awesome.
Come
thanks,
on up
guys.
Afterward. And have a great rest of the day for the Channel 9 guys here.
Yeah, thanks
come
for
back
being a great audience. Cheers.
Thanks so much. And for the guy that had a comment on rolling back your releases, I got a Channel 9 guy for you. And the gentleman that had some question about performance over on this side, come on up. Thanks, everybody.